Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Atlanta Hawks shooting guard and the NBA's most improved player, that is one Dyson Daniels. Dyson, I have no idea where you're at or what time it is, but it looks like you might have just got off the golf course not too long ago, buddy.
I was out playing golf this morning. I'm back home in Australia now, but right now it's 10:30, so getting ready for bed.
Well, I appreciate you talking to us before you turn in for the night, man. I got to tell you, so I'm doing some background, and I'm like, man, I wonder, you know, what's changed for Dyson Daniels this year? Why were the steals and the stocks and everything up so much this year? What led to you being the most improved? And as I look into your background, now I cannot stop watching highlights of Australian rules football. Like, I'm so enamored with what this sport must be. I know you have a background in it. But, you know, does that help in any way? Does Australian rules football, did that transition any way to your NBA career or help you in any way with what you were trying to do on the basketball court?
Yeah, it's funny because you look at the sports and they're kind of, you know, completely different to each other. But I think the similarities in it are the hand-eye coordination and being able to have quick hands. In football, Australian football, it's a lot of tackling. And if you get tackled, you got to handball it. So you gotta get rid of it quick. So I think having the quick hands translates to the defensive side of the floor. And I'll say those are probably the two most similar things when it comes to that. And also just reading the game as well.
Well, I want to ask basketball questions, but now I want to know about how the golf round went. I mean, what's your handicap? What kind of golfer are you, Dyson?
Yeah, I mean, I'm average. I'm about a 15 over now, but shot an 85 today, so 13 over, so getting better.
Plus four on those club links. Plus four.
I'm a horrible golfer and try to play a decent amount. Maybe I can get some lessons from you. Look, dude, it was crazy because, you know, you spend a couple years in New Orleans, you come to Atlanta, and you just take off. You know, your steals go up by over a steal a game. You know, your points go up, your minutes, everything was just kind of clicked. Why did it just click all of a sudden? What was the difference in Atlanta for you and why you just took off this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously opportunity is a big one, and coming here and getting that starting role and playing a lot more minutes was, really, really good for me. But it was my confidence, I think, was the main thing, you know, being confident in myself, coming in, believing in myself, believing in my abilities. And, you know, I think my first 2 years wasn't really a reflection of, you know, how I could, you know, play and what kind of player I was. And, getting traded to Atlanta was kind of the best thing that happened to me. I was able to get a fresh start and just come in and be myself. And, you know, Coach Q, my teammates, the whole coaching staff, the front office, you know, really believed in me from the get-go. And that made me, confident in myself and just come out and play my game and be free.
We are talking with Hawks guard and the NBA's most improved player of the year, Dyson Daniels. Dyson, when you get an award like this, and congratulations, by the way, what do you do to celebrate? Where are you going to go to soak it all in now?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm back home in Australia, so I got a lot of friends with me, and, you know, I love going to the pub, and, you know, they call it the bar in America, but the pub here, and, you know, having a few beers and stuff like that. So enjoying the off season for sure, but, you know, I think, you know, it's just more about spending time with friends and family. Obviously, a little bit of reward for effort, getting the most improved player, and I spent a lot of, you know, a lot of hard work this year, you know, this season, so... You know, we didn't get the results we wanted, but I'm excited for the future. I think we have a really good team that can, you know, compete for championships in the future. So hopefully we can keep this core group of guys together.
Hey, what was the beer? Was it a Carlton Draught or maybe a Foster's or a Cooper's Brewery? What were you drinking? What were you guys sipping on?
Yeah, Carlton Draught. Yep, that's the one.
That's
my favorite. Go on the tap, though. It has to be off the tap. That's when it's at its best.
I do got to ask before we go any further, too. You were talking about you were just, you know, got off the golf course not too long ago. What's the custom club length for a guy that's, you know, that's 6'7", 6'8", like yourself, man? Are you, like, plus 2.5? What kind of length are we dealing with here?
Well, I because my arms are so long, I don't need to get, you know, too much. So I'm plus – I got plus 2 inches on on the – from the regular club length. But, you know, I sometimes if I'm back home like I am now, I don't bring my clubs with me, so I use the rentals. So – Those ones don't help me, but I need to get some clubs while I'm home for sure, so I can have them while I'm out here.
Look, and I want to dive into this too. And we kind of we joke around about, you know, what's the difference and everything else. And I know that this award meant a lot to you. I'm curious though, when you did and you talked about, hey, it's maybe the best thing that ever happened in my career was coming to Atlanta. What was the conversations like once you got here between you and Quinn Snyder, you and Trey? You know, about the expectations for you and what those guys wanted to map out in front of you for this past season.
Yeah, I think, you know, from day one, I got to you know, sit down with Quinn, you know, when I first got to Atlanta, and I went into his office for, you know, 20 minutes, and we just talked about, you know, what this year is going to consist of. And he told me he just wanted me to go out there and be myself, play free. And, you know, he believed in my abilities. And, you know, there was no guaranteed starting spot or anything like that, so that had to be earned through the training camp and preseason and stuff like that. But, you know, conversation with Quinn, you know, Trey, I feel like we had chemistry from the start. You know, I went out to Oklahoma and did a camp with Trey before the season even started. So just building that chemistry and then coming into the season, you know, we really got along with each other. I feel like our games really complement each other. You know, they're kind of complete opposites, which, you know, help each other out. But, you know, it's everyone on the team, you know, just having that chemistry, guys believing in each other, trusting each other. And like I said, we didn't get to where we wanted to this year, but I really do think that if we keep this core group of guys together, we're going to develop together and the chemistry is going to be there. So we're going to become a really good team.
Dyson, I thought it was really cool, the video I think the NBA put out of when the announcement was made. You're sitting there with your parents and your brother, but also the when you went on TNT, your dad's behind you and he pops in the video. And I know your dad played at NC State. How important have your parents been? I mean, there's all the stuff that happened on draft day where they walked out on stage with you and everything. Just how important have they been for you during your career?
Yeah, no, they've been very important. And you know, that dad and mom, they love their TV time, so that was always going to crash the interview. But, yeah, for me, you know, growing up, you know, they've been, you know, in my corner the whole time. They've, you know, from juniors driving me, you know, 3-4 hours, you know, just to play basketball games and stuff like that. So, you know, that they're in my close circle. You know, I trust them with my whole heart. And, you know, I want to be able to give back to them. So I'm just grateful to have such a close family and friend group that, I can rely on and trust. And, you know, ever since, you know, the draft and, you know, coming into the NBA, you know, obviously, you know, my family still lives in Australia, so it's a little harder to see them during the year, but it's good to, you know, come back home after the season and stuff and catch up with them.
Finishing up with Dyson Daniels, the NBA's most improved player, and I want to talk about that for just a minute. You're the most improved player. It's obvious a couple of all seasons ago you put in that work to be, improved and to improve every area of your game. How do you keep moving forward, though? Like, once you've won the most improved, like this offseason, is there something certain that you're like, oh, I gotta get this right, I gotta get that right? I know that, you know, you work on the spin move, driving the lane. We saw that a couple times last year. What will this offseason look like after coming off an award like most improved player?
Yeah, I think getting the most improved player is just a small direction in the way I want to go. And, you know, I really think that I could win another one of these. Just I feel like I have so much more left in me to improve. And, you know, just coming into this off season is going to be a lot about, you know, my shot, you know, getting that down pat, being able to shoot off the dribble, have counter moves and stuff. Obviously, my spin into floater, spin into getting to the rim was my main counter this year. But it's about, you know, having more wiggle to my game, you know, being able to use a step back, you know, being able to drive left better and finish over bigs and stuff like that. So this off season, I don't have any Australian commitments with World Cup or Olympics, so it'll be a lot of just getting the work in and getting more wiggle to my game. So I'm looking forward to coming back next year and being a better player.
Joined by Dyson Daniels on the Morning Shift. Or some call him the Great Barrier Thief. Hey, I don't know if you're a big Formula One fan. I am, and I've watched some of this stuff on Netflix, and they got the drivers, and they're doing these little drills with their eye-hand coordination. And I can just see you sitting there in Australia doing these types of drills where it lights up and your hand goes because of how good – you even mentioned your eye-hand coordination is, but the way you make these steals, it seems like you do you do some of these drills to help get better?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually seen the Formula One drills. I'm a Formula One fan where they, you know, test their reaction speed with those lights and stuff. And obviously being a Formula One driver, that's what you need to have. But I don't do those sort of drills, but, you know, I do a lot of stuff with, like, tennis balls and juggling and those sort of things. So just to, you know, get my hand-eye coordination going. But I think it's something I've always had and I'm been good at. And, you know, playing football, Australian football when I was younger, I got those skills as well. So, yeah, I think it's one thing you either have it or you don't, but it's definitely something that you can work on and be better at.
There you have it, man. Now I'm buying juggling batons for my 4.5-year-old son because, you know, he's got to get right. Dyson, man, hey, get some good sleep. Appreciate you hanging out with us this morning.
I will. No, I appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
Day, Danny Ferry, because it struck a nerve with our audience. Can you confirm that Danny Ferry is, in fact, a candidate, as the reports out there are talking about?
I can't confirm, nor can I deny that report was accurate. It wasn't. Wait a second. I can't confirm and I can't deny that report was accurate. It wasn't. So several of the names in there that were attributed to league sources were not accurate. That's all I really can say.
Okay. With that said, is there a timeline we're looking at for this executive hire? I mean, you got the draft less than 2 months away. You've got the draft combine before that. I mean, how much time do we have to play before you really get to it and have to make a hire?
Well, the great news is our new general manager, Ansu Sala, we think the absolute world of, and we're not going to make a hire until we find the right person. So we're working through a process. We've had a first group of interviews, and we will continue till we find the right person. So we don't feel the pressure of a timeline.
Steve, what is it that you feel like you're looking for? And I know it's not solely you, obviously Tony Ressler, and there's a variety of people involved in this, but when we talk about the president of basketball ops, I've been saying to our audience, this individual, whoever they are, is going to come in and be a major decision maker and shaping the future of this organization. What are you guys looking for when you talk about either traits, experience? Is there something specific that you feel like you have to have?
Well, we think leadership is the first piece. We think, you know, the ability to build a roster and knowledge of the league and the players is a very, very important piece. It is a players' league today. I think we all know that. Mm-hmm. And we want somebody who's a really good guy and can be a great teammate to Quinn, to me, to Ansi. And that's really what we're looking for. But I would think leadership is the biggest key. You know, I'm sorry Mike's not here today because I do enjoy, you know, lecturing him on the finer points of our collective bargaining agreement.
Well, you can lecture and I'll send it to him. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's fine. As we've talked about, it gets really complex we all know the jam that Phoenix has gotten himself into. There was a lot of press this week about Giannis and Milwaukee and the problems they are with the complexity of the new collective bargaining agreement. You know, it raises the bar of the executives, and that's one of the things where Ansi, who is an attorney who worked in San Antonio and then worked for Bob Myers at Golden State, which is, you know, from Harvard the MBA of the NBA, and say that fast three times. So we're looking for, you know, a powerful voice and great leadership and real skill and understanding of the players in the league and the players around the world.
What do you envision the power structure being between Quinn Snyder, Antti Salla, and the new hire in terms of decision? And obviously it's going to be collaborative, but who ultimately is going to have final decision-making there?
Well, the final decision-making will rest with the president of basketball. You know, when the president of basketball says to Tony Ressler, I need $40 million to go into the tax, that's when Tony will go into the tax. You know, it's foolish to think that the owner decides when to go into the tax and the roster. The president of basketball makes that decision, and then it will be approved, and we will be, you know, hopefully competitive. But again, the new CBA, it's not about money. It's about flexibility. It's about being able to make trades. It's about being able to manage your draft pick. So it's really interesting. And I also think that this could be one of the most unique summers in a long, long time, because there are a lot of teams who are really handcuffed and are going to try to get out of that purgatory they're in.
No doubt. Steve Koonin, Hawks CEO, joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're talking about the Hawks in the process of interviewing potential candidates for the president of basketball operations position that is open. And again, if you just missed it, Steve says he can't confirm nor deny some of the reports that are out there about certain candidates. And one of them I mentioned by name. I know you can't mention any of these guys by name, but I was talking about Danny Ferry, which had some of our audience saying, okay, what does this mean? When we talk about the experience aspect of things, how big of a piece is that? Because part of the Hawks audience and our audience, Steve, says, well, wait a minute. You know, you guys gave Landry, our previous general manager, Landry Fields, an opportunity, and he really didn't have experience. Does that mean now that that is something that you absolutely have to have if you're looking at this next position?
Deep experience in the NBA doesn't necessarily mean that you've run a team, but okay. deep experience in the NBA.
Okay. All right.
It was award season here, Steve, and a little frustration. The vote for Rookie of the Year wasn't a little bit closer. I thought Reza Shea, and he gets second, but certainly that should have been a much closer vote. Also frustrated that Dyson didn't win Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know what sport other people are watching, but he did win Most Improved Player. And just to have guys in those discussions, to have Dyson in discussion for Defensive and Most Improved, Reza Shea for Rookie of the Year, has got to make the organization feel good about the future moving forward with these two guys as part of the core.
Yeah, I mean, we're elated. Just being in the top two or three is fantastic. It's a really competitive league. And then you look at the growth from Onyeka Okongwu, the last, you know, since he became a starter, he's a monster. That Miami, our final game, unfortunately, he was incredible. And he had several 20-20 games this year. And then you put in Jalen Johnson, who again is only 23 years old, and we think we have as good a young core as there is in the league to build around.
You know, I've been saying this, and I want to get your thoughts, because I'm looking around the league, and we were talking about this on the show the other day, Steve. You know, team building is not just going out and getting stars, and this gets back to your aprons, right, and you know, luxury tax comment. But I'm looking around and I'm saying the teams that are going to be good for a while have just been constructed the right way, and they don't have three superstars. Many of them don't have two superstars. I mean, you know, look, I'm looking at the Knicks last night, and I'm saying, who thought Jalen Brunson would be this good when he left Dallas? And my point is, those are the kind of things that whoever gets this job moving forward, along with our new general manager and Ansi, those are the kind of pieces, right, that you have to add that give you that stability that we're talking about, those pieces that – sometimes people go, well, I don't think that's going to work. But then it does.
Well, Carl, you're 1,000% right. Case in point, Dyson Daniels. Some could say he was a throw into the trade because we got two first-round draft picks. By the way, one of them Milwaukee's. And look at Dyson. I mean, now a core piece of the Hawks for a long time to come. Really, really powerful piece. You look at the roster construction of Oklahoma City. You look at the days of the big three in Miami with Bosch, Wade, and LeBron can't happen today. And they tried it in Phoenix, and it didn't go according to plan. You know, with Beal, with
Durant,
Kevin Durant, and
Booker.
You know, three guys, and Devin Booker, three guys over $50 million in salary. Didn't work. So it's a very different NBA, and I think the playoffs have been fantastic.
Steve, I got to talk about a couple of non-Hawks things at State Farm Arena. Really the talk of the town. A Pearl Jam the past couple of days. Everyone is raving about it. And I personally am looking forward to the UFC that is going to be coming here. Tickets are already flying off, and I need to make sure I secure mine. But certainly continue to be excited that State Farm Arena is just hosting some of the biggest and best things that this city has to offer.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And we also this week announced our CBS Classic, and we've got St. John's coached by Rick Pitino against Kentucky, which I think they call our city Catlanta in Kentucky. Should be a crazy game. And then North Carolina against Ohio State, both perennial contenders. I'm so excited about UFC. It's been 6 years since they've been in Atlanta, and I urge people to get your tickets now, because it's going to be sold out, and it's got a great card, and it's going to be one of the most amazing nights. We've had the sports electric, and it's going to be nuts. So I want to show the UFC. Atlanta deserves to be in the rotation more often by selling it out and having an incredible crowd.
We've got a great fight city. We always have. Going back to, you know, Ali in the boxing days. I mean, like, we've always done a great job with that, Steve. And you're right. The UFC is no different. We were just talking about that earlier. It's funny you bring that up, Abe, because we're out here at the Atlanta United Training Grounds today, and we were just talking about that event. And there's probably, I don't know, four or five media members who were talking about, you know, wanting to go as fans and just be there. So, yeah, looking forward to that and much more at State Farm Arena. All right, Steve, before we get out of here, LeBron, I'm just curious. They're done. Is he done? Do you think he's going to come back and play? Nobody really knows. He said he's got to take some time and think about it. But I don't think he's done. I think at 41, we're going to see amazing, you know, LeBron come back.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Obviously, opinion only, but
yeah,
he had a very, very good season. He was all NBA, but this is plays to the point, Carl, that you just talked about roster building.
Yes,
you know, they didn't have a center. Rudy Gobert had a historic night against him. I think 27 and 24, because they didn't have a center because they've got two guys in the mid-50s. And the coach wouldn't play Jackson Hayes, who, you know, was picked by New Orleans and put into the Anthony Davis trade, I believe. And, you know, just didn't feel like they could play him. And that lack of depth, I think the Lakers had like 14 less offensive rebounds. So obviously Minnesota's going to win every time under those circumstances. So it's a really, really different league than it's been before. So buckle up, and hopefully we have LeBron coming back for years to come. Tom Brady played at a high level to 45. I think LeBron can too.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Steve, thanks for the comments. And again, can't confirm nor deny some of the candidates that we've been talking about today, but they are interviewing a long list of potential candidates for their basketball, president of basketball ops. Steve, thanks again. Have a great weekend. Appreciate you.
Much appreciated. Take care, everybody.
All right, there he is.
Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas Turtle with you till 10 o'clock, and well, really 11. Chris Thomas tonight will end at 10, but then the Atlanta baseball post-game show will get rocking and rolling right at 10 o'clock after Braves-Dodgers, the only post-game call-in show for Atlanta baseball here in the great city of Atlanta and the great state of Georgia. So take advantage of it. I'm here. Call me. We'll talk about the game. Everything that happens, the good, the bad, and the ugly. 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. If you didn't get a chance to hop on with the Braves question here, is this the stretch of games, these next 14 that we've been talking about? 3 versus the Dodgers, 4 versus Cincy, 3 at Pittsburgh, 4 at home versus Washington. I think this is the stretch here that they can take advantage of it, get over 500, and never look back. What do you think? Do you agree with that? Because I really do. I don't care who it's against. You're not at a position to nitpick right now. We had one caller who said, you know, you're kind of beating up on bad competition. It's true, but with the way you started, you got to take every win that you can get, right? That's just ultimately what it comes down to. So what do you think? Is this the stretch the Braves can get back over 500 and never look back? Phone lines are open for you, 404-726-0929. Also, hit me up if you can't get through on the phones at C Thomas Radio on the Twitter. And that is also where you will find the new link to the Chris Thomas Tonight podcast page. Please do your guy a favor. I am digital. This is a social show. It is very important to me and to everybody else here at 92.9 The Game that we kick butt in the podcast game. And my podcast is now up and running, so make sure that you hit me up. It is at C Thomas Radio. There's a link, 3 different ways to access the program. It is on the Odyssey app. It is on Google, and it is on Spotify. It is on Apple. Basically, if you get a podcast and you get a podcast and you get a podcast, you can find the Chris Thomas Tonight page and please sign up and help out your boy. All right, 404-726-0929. Without further ado, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy, Joe Patrick. Now, Joe, I think I know what's going on here because Mark Raimondi, our buddy, who you may be in present company with right now, tipped your hand a little bit. So y'all are taking in some local wrestling tonight here in Atlanta, and right. I think it may have caused you to forget poor little old me hosting my show here on 92.9 The Game. Do I have that one right?
You are very good at this, Chris. You are very good at this. Yes. In fact, we were just in line for some food actually before the wrestling show, which is great. This is actually my third time. Never been a wrestling guy actually. Well, I was as a kid. I think like a lot of people were, sure. But haven't paid attention to it for years, and it's quite fun. And we're not talking about like Olympic wrestling. We're talking about full blown.
No,
you know,
you're talking
nickname.
About no. This is wrestling.
Oh yeah,
this isn't wrestling.
Yeah.
This is wrestling.
Yeah,
is what you're doing.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Exactly. As Dom just said in my ear, we're gonna break out the bone saw tonight, and it's gonna be a heck of an affair.
We'll see some foreign objects tonight.
Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly. Who leaves with a chair being slammed to the back of their head?
Uh-huh.
Will somebody break out a bone saw? We shall see.
Chris,
go ahead.
Great. They will fly out into those stands. Like they have to tell you to move, and they'll
do a flying thing
out into your chair.
You don't get to AEW or WWE by accident. You got to earn.
Right.
You really
right.
got to earn
in the hard yards.
Yeah,
that's right.
I'm gonna on Monday when we chat. I'm gonna need a full review of how the game went. And if Raimondi over there gets a little sloppy, I want you to snitch on him, too.
he keeps it straight-laced. He's the responsible one of the group.
Oh, okay. Well, then if you get
I'll also be with Mike Rothstein tonight. We'll also be joining us.
Wow, look at what a trifecta.
So not just the current Falcons reporter, but the previous one. Yeah. The whole thing.
That is a heck. I would, man, if I wasn't working, I would have to be a fly on the wall for that room. That is one heck of a thing. All right, so pretty much if you were a coordinator or you have a staff position on the Falcons, you spoke this week. What were some of the biggest takeaways from guys like Zach Robinson, TJ Yates, Ike Hilliard? We'll start with the offense first.
Yeah. You know, I talked to Zach for a little bit, talked to TJ Yates, the quarterback's coach, for a while, and you know, they're just really excited. I mean, I think that's the main takeaway is they're excited for what this offense can be. I think they're excited to work with Michael Penix and get a whole off season and obviously the season going into it just to really focus on him and focus on this Falcons offense being, you know, living up to the expectations of what we thought it could be last year and what's going to have to be this year if this team wants to make the playoffs. And, you know, when they talk about Mike, I wish I had more glowing things that they like have said about him. But I think it's part of just kind of who Michael Penix is, as just kind of a not a big talker, you know, put his head down, get to work. He's really not like a flashy guy whatsoever, considering he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. And I think that's what these coaches like about him so much. And obviously there's that, but then there's also the talent that he has. And that's what like Zach Robinson was talking about, you know, with his playbook. I think that there are obviously areas of the field that Michael Penix can access that not only can Kirk Cousins not do, but many other quarterbacks in the National Football League cannot access. And I think that with the weapons that they know they have on the outside, I think they are just really excited that they can get some of these playmakers involved. And so from the offensive standpoint, there's not any major additions in free agency. There was, you know, just one lowly draft pick in the seventh round that adds to that group. But I think that there's maybe more excitement for what the team can be on that side of the ball, just because of the natural growth they expect from Penix and this young core around him.
All right, one thing I want to dive a little deeper on. Zach Robinson was talking about wanting to get more explosive plays for Bijan Robinson. And yeah, it was interesting. I was hearing our guys in the morning breaking it down, Dukes and Bell. Joe, my take on it is I don't care if he gets 47-yard runs. If he's averaging 5.5 yards a carry, I mean, that's just right. Sort of my approach to it. Listen, I don't know if you can necessarily game plan for explosive plays by a running back. It's sort of on him to break tackles and get to the second level and see what he can do from there. So what did you make of those comments? I certainly understand where they're coming from, but that is certainly not the top of list of my concerns for the offense.
Yeah, no doubt. But I think that it does speak a lot about who Bijan Robinson is and just how good they think he is, where it's like, where can he make improvements? More explosive touchdown runs instead of just these measly 20 to 30 yarders, you know, like that's like really the level that he's at. And, you know, I think it's a fair kind of critique. There aren't many areas of Bijan's game to critique. And I would say the one is you don't see him having like what we saw Saquon Barkley doing a lot last year for the Eagles, where he's able to, you know, just get to the edge and outrun opposing defenses. And I think what Zach was talking about, it's not so much about how they kind of scheme it up in terms of the plays, but it's actually how, you know, they coach some of the guys to, you know, hold their blocks and things. But also for Bijan, he was talking about, you know, are there ways where we can get him to kind of put defenders in even more precarious positions by getting closer to them before he makes his cut? And that being able to hopefully lead to some more of those, like, we're talking, when we talk about explosive runs, an explosive run is really a 20-yard game, but what they're talking about is like 40-yard plus or touchdown runs from distance. And if the Falcons can get that going in their offense, I mean, oh boy. Like, and Chris, you would think that, like, with Michael Penix and a more dangerous passing attack, a more varied passing attack than what they had last year, that's going to help Bijan so much. And I think that there's going to be an even better year on the horizon for him, to be honest.
Obviously, the 800-pound elephant in the room continues to be Kirk Cousins. Of course, Zach Robinson was going to be asked about it, and he's given the lock, stock, and barrel answer that everybody else has, Joe, and that is he's here, he's working, no issues, he's the backup, he knows it, and onwards we go. So again, Joe, as we talked about at the beginning of the week, I am as convinced now as ever that Kirk is probably just going to be here, man.
Yeah, probably. I mean, unless something major changes, that's probably going to be the case. And honestly, I think that this is a situation for Kirk where it's not all that dissimilar from when he's hit free agency in the past in his career, where he's been open about saying, you know, listen, we wanted to go to the market to see what our value was. Ours. He always kind of talks about him and his agent kind of together. And I think that that's basically what he's done. And I think the answer that he's gotten from the NFL is, you know, there isn't really that big of a market for you. At least one, you know, it would be different if he was a free agent and, you know, the Falcons weren't going to demand anything in return. But, you know, from the way that things sit right now, nobody has, you know, sees him and looks at a quarterback that they really want to give up, you know, assets to trade for or, you know, pay him basically what the Falcons are paying him. So, yeah. I think that he might, you know, say to himself, listen, I've gone to the market. The market doesn't value me. I've got a home already, and that might be it. I thought it was interesting, Chris. You know, I didn't kind of drill down into this, but I heard the coaches talk about, you know, has Kirk been here? Well, he's been here a handful of times, or a few, you know, the times that he's been here. It sounded like he wasn't like perfect attendance with some of the off-season workouts. I could be wrong there. I could just, but I'm just kind of speculating on the way that it was phrased. So I'm sure that he still would like to get out, but he might just be in a situation where he's gotten his answer and, you know, there's not going to be a solution for it until, you know, potentially there's an injury if that were to occur. But, you know, it's very possible that won't occur and he'll just be the team's backup quarterback.
Talking all things Atlanta Falcons with our Falcons Insider reporter Joe Patrick here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas, Turtle with you till 10, followed immediately by the Atlanta baseball postgame show. All right, Joe, one thing I was disappointed in is obviously Jeff Ulbrich spoke. He apologized. We're moving on from it. But I wanted to hear about the defense. I wanted to hear about some of the additions and how he's going to use Jalen Walker and how he's going to use James Pearson. I just felt like, you know, the oxygen was unfortunately just kind of sucked out of the room on that.
Yeah, well, I think that was actually like kind of – well, I don't think he was even going to speak to, during on that day had that whole situation not occurred, because – he had already spoken to media over the draft weekend talking about these players. And so that's the reason why his involvement wasn't so crucial, because we'd already heard, you know, and I thought it was actually important and quite clarifying for Falcons fans to hear so soon after the draft from the new defensive coordinator directly saying, listen, Jalen Walker is going to come in. He's going to be an edge. You know, he obviously has his off-ball talent and stuff, but we want him to master this one position. You know, that's from Jeff Ulbrich. And also with some of these other guys, the Billy Bowman, you know, he's going to be our nickelback. So I think that we have gotten some things from Jeff Ulbrich in this period. And I think it's been like quite clear. And I think that that's a great sign for Falcons fans and what the Falcons defense is. There's not a lot of wishy-washy, like, you know, he's a versatile player. He can play in a lot of positions for us. So we'll just kind of see, you know, and I think that they have a very clear plan, especially with the guys that they drafted, about how they're going to use them. And, you know, I think it's going to be, honestly, I think it's going to be for the better. I mean, it couldn't really have been much worse than the coordinating that this team had on defense last year.
So that's fascinating. See, I didn't realize that, because I know he had spoke some, but I thought this was just a follow-up press conference that he was doing, and the only thing he was asked about was the situation.
No.
I did not realize that this was an impromptu press conference. That's very illuminating, Joe.
And I think, hey, like, well, on the Sanders topic, like, I thought he handled it like a total man, honestly. Like, and there's probably other more eloquent words for it, but like, I just thought it was, I really respected what he did, you know, going up there and saying what he did that day. And just the way he said it, you know, taking the responsibility on himself, not even really putting a lot of it on his son. Obviously he was involved and he did say that he was like acted totally inappropriately, but he said that, listen, you know, the leak was with me. I take responsibility for that. And, obviously not going to appeal his fine or anything.
All right. Before I let you go, you know, I got to ask you, what does this match mean for United on Saturday? How important is this one to get three?
I mean, it's really important. They got to turn this around somehow. You know, this is a difficult Nashville team. This is not kind of the Nashville team that I think a lot of MLS fans have come to expect to see over the last couple of years, where they're kind of this defensive, organized, boring, frankly. When you hear those words, we're talking about boring defensive soccer. That's not what they are. They have a new head coach this year who's, you know, they're only the second head coach in the team's history, and he wants them attacking. They've got speed on the wings. They've really got players that can hurt Atlanta. And honestly, I feel like Atlanta United feels a little bit of pressure playing in front of their own fans at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I think that, you know, that can that fan base can and this goes for any sport when you're struggling. Well, when you're playing well, it feels like that the fan base is totally propelling you on. But when it gets to the point where Atlanta United is, I have to think that some of these players are kind of a little bit stressed out. And we just see them kind of look that way on the field all the time. So definitely an important match, though, for them to get right. Because it's just like in basketball or golf, like, you need to see the ball go in. You know, you need to see like something good happen for yourself to give you that positive feeling. That's what they need on Saturday.
All right, Joe, head on a swivel tonight, my friend. I need you for your Monday spot, so no concussions because a chair came flewing at you, all right?
I'll do my best, but I can't make any guarantees.
All right, Joe, enjoy the show. We'll talk on Monday. That is our good buddy there, Joe Patrick, Atlanta Falcons reporter. See, I knew it, Dom. He wasn't ready for me to come out swinging like that. I was like, Joe's not picking up the phone. I know he's getting into this wrestling show because I heard Ramondi snitch on him that they were going tonight. I just wasn't sure what time it started. 404-726-0929. Appreciate Joe, as always, for hopping on. All right, when we get back, there are so many NFL offseason storylines, man, and we have so much to get into. Dom's got five true and false NFL offseason questions for me. Our buddy Joe De Leon is going to join us, and also a football frenzy on a Friday. It is an NFL and college football 7 o'clock hour. You can't beat it. Coming up next, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. This hour brought to you by our friends at Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs and save more lives. It is Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. There is so much going on in the NBA. We're going to get to a little five-pack of true and false questions with Dom coming up in the top of next hour. Also, our buddy Bill Bender is going to talk some college football with us next hour. Just jam-packed, and of course, a football frenzy to close out the 7 o'clock hour as we do each and every day. Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle with you till 10 o'clock, the full four on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. But right now, we need to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy, Will McFadden, senior writer and editor of AtlantaFalcons.com. Will, let's start with the bad before we get to the good. Get it right out of the way. Jeff Ulbrich, obviously an emotional presser yesterday. We know about the fines. This should be over and done with now, right? We just keep it moving.
Boy, I sure hope so, Chris. I thought Jeff did a great job in his press conference yesterday, being very frank, being very forthright, taking accountability on behalf of him and his son. It sounds like they've reached out to the Sanders family, that they were accepting and gracious about the whole thing. So, yeah, the fines have been levied, the lessons have been learned, and I think we can finally move or turn the page on kind of an unfortunate draft chapter.
All right, so to the positive, the draft knocked it out of the park. I gave it an A. How did you diagnose the picks from falling into their lap at 15, Jalen Walker, trading up for Pierce, and the rest of the picks?
Yeah, this was one of the rare drafts where it kind of really didn't matter if they were going to go best player available or needs-based, because that was the same thing in Jalen Walker there at 15. So all of the hand-wringing and fretting about, what would the strategy lead to this year, I think everybody is kind of right in line with you and me and giving the Falcons a really high grade for this draft, even though they only went in with five picks. And look, I know a lot of the national media attention, I think, has been kind of on Atlanta giving up next year's first round pick to make the move back up for James Pierce. But from everybody that I've talked to, it sounds like James Pierce was, a player they really, really liked. And that was something that we have heard from everybody in kind of the Falcons front office this weekend. It was the conviction they felt for him as a pass rusher. And if you look at what Atlanta's biggest need was by far going into this draft, they came away with two players that everybody, kind of the consensus was, hey, they're among the most talented, physically gifted edge players in this class. And hey, you got two of them. So I think if you're starting from there, that is a great first round to build upon.
Were you surprised they didn't take a defensive tackle?
I definitely, when you would have asked me maybe at the after Thursday night, all right, where do the Falcons go from here? As a couple of people did, defensive tackle was definitely one of the positions that I tossed out there. I really do think, in kind of hearing from guys like Kyle Smith, the assistant GM, and Terry Fondo himself, like it's sometimes not purely about that position, right? So where they are picking, and one of the most interesting things that Kyle Smith said was that if the Falcons had stayed at 46, he felt there was actually a pretty decent chance that an offensive player could have been the pick there. And I think that is an example of the bucket system that they use, but kind of every team around the league uses. And I've used it myself for like fantasy football drafts,
right? So it's not a totally foreign concept. It's basically just like, hey, we've got these 10 to 12 players all graded about the same. They just could include three tight ends, four offensive linemen, two safeties, a running back, and a quarterback in that like group. And the next group could be six wide receivers, two running. It's like you never really know what's in that batch, but that's the caliber of player. So I do think that they could have used, you know, a good defensive tackle coming out of this. But honestly, I'm pretty excited too about the ball hawks that they got on the back end. If they need a big run stuffing kind of interior player, that is among the easier things I think to find on the open market. You know, this time last year, we didn't really have an idea that Eddie Goldman was going to be back. So there are moves to still be made, I think, along that front.
You think they feel comfortable right away with Mike Hughes at CB2 and then giving Billy Bowman the chance to start at nickel? Because I know he's going to make that transition from safety to nickel.
Yeah, I do think that that Mike Hughes right now, you know, should feel fairly comfortable in that quarterback two spot. I thought he played really well last year, you know, for the season that AJ was having. Mike Hughes, you know, being that number two corner opposite a corner on kind of a heater, they're going to get targeted a lot. And, you know, there were a couple of plays you can nitpick here or there, but by and large, when he was healthy, I thought Mike Hughes was pretty rock solid. So I would expect him to get that first crack at the cornerback two spot like he had last year. And then, yeah, the real battle for me will be in that nickel spot for Atlanta, which will be, you know, Dee Alford, who they brought back on a one-year deal, and then Billy Bowman, who, yeah, is going to transfer or kind of transition from that safety spot that he played at Oklahoma and move much closer to the line of scrimmage. And I'm really curious to see how they incorporate him down there. They have, last year with Kevin King and kind of the way that they were using him as a pseudo like big safety nickel like linebacker hybrid, if they do something really creative with Billy Bowman down there as kind of like a nickel safety. Now he's not as big as Kevin King surely, but he's got some of the tenacity that you would want in a player close to the line of scrimmage. That to me is the Falcons using their resources in the secondary, particularly in the coaching staff, in really interesting ways. And I just kind of think that's like an underlying theme of the first couple of years with Raheem Morrison here.
Talking all things Falcons with our buddy Will McFadden, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com. Make sure you check out all their podcasts and interviews on the team's website. All right, so when it comes to the 800-pound gorilla in the room, it was addressed by Zach Robinson and others. Status quo for Kirk Cousins right now, Will, and for the first time, I know I personally am coming around to the idea that he may actually wind up being the backup next season, as crazy as that sounded, even as early as just a couple of weeks ago. From everything you've heard, do you agree with that assessment?
I mean, as of right now, that's kind of the way it feels. And I think Ian Rapoport put it best and had a tweet that was basically just, kind of a hit on the insiders that was like, look, yeah, at this point, it feels like Kirk Cousins is going to be the backup in Atlanta. And I don't really have a source for that because the Falcons have just been saying that from the beginning. And that is, you know, the original stance they took. Everybody, I think, looked at the $10 million bonus that triggered earlier in the offseason as kind of a pseudo deadline for Atlanta. They rolled right past that, you know, and said, hey, look, we're on the hook for 90. What's that extra 10? If we can keep a really quality backup, and that's what Kirk Cousins is, you know, the Falcons, that move in the draft to go back up and get James Pierce, yeah, they added a really quality player. They also got that fifth-year option for him, which is an important thing to remember and consider, but it's also a move that signals a lot of belief in the team that's already in pocket and the team that is already assembled. And with Michael Penix Jr., like kind of showing the flashes that he did last year, there's a lot of excitement around the offense. If your defense can make a small step forward, this should be a playoff team. And so then you start kind of looking at, all right, what could potentially derail that? And for any team in the league, quarterback is the easiest path for a season to kind of go off the rails. So having Kirk Cousins in the fold is excellent from that standpoint because he is still a very, very good quarterback. And everybody, you know, on the coaching staff, players that I've talked to, like they have not said a bad thing about how Kirk has handled himself throughout this entire situation. I was there when he held the press conference right after the news came down, and I thought he was as gracious and kind of magnanimous as he could be, but you could still tell he had that competitive fire in him. So that, if that ultimately ends up coming to fruition, like, I do think that everybody has all the faith in the world in Michael Penix Jr. Everything we saw from him in those three games shows that he can be a very high caliber starter in this league. So the excitement around him is real and legitimate. But if Kirk Cousins is also in the fold as that backup quarterback, you know, that's a really high floor to be going into a season with.
I've asked a bunch of people that I've had on since the draft about this next question, and I've gotten some varying answers, so curious to hear yours. How do you feel about the state of the wide receiver room? Is it deep enough?
You know, that's a great question. And I would not have been shocked, in fact, in a lot of the mocks that I did. It mostly came down to Torrey Horton out of Colorado State. I don't know why that was the guy that just seemed to always be kind of landing right there. But in that fourth round pick, 118, that is kind of where I thought Atlanta could maybe go with an offensive player. And honestly, even at 218, when they had that seventh round pick, I was looking at a lot of the wide receivers that were still on the board. And I thought the Falcons could definitely be in play to add one of those. And that's not a slight to the guys they have in that position group. It just means that there are some elements that I do think you could add. You know, as for if Drake, he plays a lot in the slot, but he often ends up, I think, on the boundary. They could have that kind of like crosser route specialist type of player that they haven't really, really added yet. Ray McCloud is, I think, more of a screen guy and a little bit more of a downfield person than I thought he would be. Darnell certainly is. Drake is great at everything. But yeah, they could stand to, I think, add one more piece to this wide receiver room. Do they have to? Not necessarily, because you do have two really good backs in Bijan and Tyler Allgeier, and having them on the field at the same time is an option. In fact, I was talking to Michael Petrie, the running backs coach, yesterday, and one of the things kind of we talked about for Bijan this offseason was his repertoire as a receiver. And that was a skill he had coming out of Texas, but really kind of adding that as one of the few elements of his game left to expand. So could they use one? Yes. I wouldn't be shocked if they add one, but they do have a lot of weapons already.
Looks like they're taking a real chance on a couple of guys in the linebacker room, in Troy Andersen staying healthy and J.D. Bertrand continuing to develop. I know they brought in Divine Diablo. Did you think that their strategy in terms of reworking the linebacker room, is this something that is going to be a potential question mark, or you think it's solid through and through?
I think it's solid right now as it stands. You know, obviously losing Nate Landman hurts from a production standpoint over the last couple of years, but there were times last season where it kind of felt like once the injuries started to pile up, like he was not 100% the best fit in this scheme. So I kind of think that plays a little bit into him no longer being here. Enter Divine Diablo, who is a really kind of instinctual, fast flowing downhill run defender, which is something that the Falcons are going to definitely welcome into their defense. And let's not discount, you know, the leap that J.D. Bertrand, I think, can maybe make in year two. This is a player who, as a day three pick last year, really kind of saw the most action of all the rookies. So I do think the coaching staff feels pretty highly thinks highly of him. And then, you know, Caden Ellis, like he did everything for them last year. I expect him to stay in that role this year and really kind of be that do-it-all middle linebacker. He's going to get some help with Jalen Walker, certainly. It sounds like they're going to use Jalen specifically more at edge, so I don't know if we're going to see him kind of right next to Caden as much as maybe everybody fan-casted immediately when the pick was made.
Do you like that, by the way? Because I heard that as well, and I don't know how to feel about it, Will, because I feel like part of the reason he's so valuable is because he's so versatile. So do you want to limit him, but also you don't want to overwhelm him? So I understand it being a tricky situation.
Yeah. So, Chris, one of my favorite prospects that in my time as kind of a professional was Isaiah Simmons coming out of Clemson. and similar player, even more of kind of like a safety, like almost Kyle Hamilton, but as a linebacker, and also could really rush the passer. So I like was fascinated by him as this spider monkey who could do everything. And he didn't really pan out in the way that I thought he would. He didn't change the league so much as he never really assimilated in a way that provided value for the teams that he was on, Arizona or New York. And so I kind of look at what was the lesson from that. And at any position, whether you're a specialist working on one thing or you are a player with a lot of different roles, and that's why tight end is also a tricky position to assimilate quickly to, because they have a hand in everything. I do think that giving a player a more manageable role to own and clearly say, I want your focus here every single day, is beneficial in year one. And usually the biggest leap that a player will make is going into year two and going into year three. I think it is smart to have to lessen that learning curve in year one, say, focus on this. This is what you're doing every single day. You've got enough to learn just as a rookie in the NFL. Then in year two and year three, we're going to really start to expand you in the ways that we have uncovered are best, because now we've worked with you directly for a year. So I do like this approach for that reason.
Will, appreciate the time. As always, we'll be watching and reading at AtlantaFalcons.com. We'll chat soon.
Appreciate it, Chris. Anytime, my friend.
All right, that is our good buddy Will McFadden there of AtlantaFalcons.com. Great stuff there on the draft and the state of the team. Again, a reminder, this hour, the 6 o'clock hour, every single day is brought to you by our great friends at Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs and save more lives. All right, when we get back, there is a ton going on in the NBA right now. LeBron, Luka, out. Halliburton, dad, Giannis, World War III. Was potentially avoided between those two. That was crazy. Knicks on the verge of elimination to the Pistons. Are they really that good? I mean, they're forcing a game 6. We'll see. And then Clippers Nuggets. There is a lot going on in the NBA right now. We're going to do 5 NBA true false questions when we get back. And then our buddy Bill Bender is going to stop by. How good does he think these Georgia players can be? I'm looking at Malachi Starks for the Ravens, man. That looks like a perfect fit. All right, we got a jam-packed 7 o'clock hour on the way. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app, Chris Thomas tonight. What in the heck is potentially going on with the front office with our Atlanta Hawks? Heck if I know. There was a list put out today by our good buddy Zach Klein of WSB. Elton Brand, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, Monty McNair, Calvin Booth, and Danny Ferry are the leading candidates for that new basketball ops position. Danny Ferry, that guy, right? The one who was here before? Yeah, that one. Let's head out to the waitingfor.com hotline on Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 10 o'clock. Matt Moore, the Action Network NBA writer and insider. Matt, I'm going to be honest with you. Love to get your opinion on this. I have no idea what to make of it. We all know how things came and went in a flash here for Mr. Ferry in Atlanta. Do you believe in second chances, and do you think he would be a good fit basketball-wise to help lead the Atlanta Hawks?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is just, the question is who's going to be in charge, because what we've heard about the Hawks from league sources over the years has just been there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. Like, I would talk to one person and be like, so who do you talk to in Atlanta? And they would say one person, and then I would talk to another and say, who do you talk to? And they would say another. And that constant kind of confusion over who exactly is the final decision maker was really confusing. Now, my understanding is that Owensley has been the one making the final decisions over the last 6 months, really, for most of the season. So, you know, there's a lot of confidence in him, honestly, as a potential, you know, someone to kind of calm the waters. But if they're looking at Elton Brand with the Sixers and how that situation kind of unfolded, even though I think Elton is well-regarded in the league and with free agents, you know, I think there's a lot of questions there. Ferry, look, it's been a long time. Ferry's had good moments and some bad ones. And I think the real question here is just, who is ownership going to empower to actually run things and actually have a vision? And you can have a lot of voices in the room. That's good. You want disagreement. You want smart people who disagree in a room. But you got to have one person who's in charge at the top of it to be able to set the culture and the vision for the team. And that, to me, is the most important part of this decision.
Yeah, and that all hinges on one thing and one thing only, Matt, obviously, and that is if you give Trae Young all the money, because he can get all the money here in Atlanta, or if you decide that that era should come to an end, are you, simply put, are you a Trae Young believer?
Not with this iteration of the Hawks. I think that there's a possibility that Trae goes somewhere and kind of modifies his game and isn't that type of player. What we're kind of seeing is, like, it's really difficult, to have this iso-centric basketball style that we saw with James Harden in Houston. Like, even Luka Doncic, there were real problems. The Mavs made the finals last year, but that was mostly on the back of the defense and a little bit of a less usage for him. And you see this year, with them running more Luka ball, them struggling more in the playoffs because of it. You have to kind of get away from that. And I think if Trae were to go to a situation where he's going to be more of one of many stars, I think Trae could be successful, especially if he's got defenders around him, a situation like potentially Atlanta, if he can, if he's okay with the ball not being in his hands all the time. But with Atlanta, I just think there's too much ingrained kind of culture there of Trey's the guy, everything goes through Trae. I love the Hawks' young core. How can you not? Jalen Johnson was phenomenal this year before his injury.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about that young man's future. But, and Dyson Daniels and Onyeka Okongwu, I thought had a breakout season. There's a real chance for some excitement there and a different type of team, but I'm not sure that that can happen with Trae. So I think there's probably got to be a little bit of an adjustment there moving away from Young long-term for the health of the franchise.
When it comes to completing that build out of the roster, the glaring number one need is for a true traditional big man who can finish and be a defensive protector around the rim. Is there a guy out there that's either going to be a free agent or a likely trade candidate this offseason that you would think would make sense for the Hawks to pursue?
I don't think there's a long-term option because those are got to be building block guys. And honestly, it's a real dangerous situation, even with the draft, trying to find one. But the Memphis Grizzlies went in on Zach Edey, and he's very plodding and slow, and the numbers are good with him. He's an incredible rebounder. He's got good post moves, but it's hard to build around that. You notice, like, the guys that are really dominant as bigs right now are either guys like Evan Mobley and Bam Adebayo, where they're hyper versatile, or they're the opposite, which is like Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic, and they're so gifted offensively that they're a threat from at three levels to score. And that, to me, is what you kind of have to look for. Though, look, if the Miami Heat were to finally give up the ghost, I do think the Bam Adebayo would be an incredible fit next to, if you kept Trae Young and you were able to acquire Bam Adebayo, I don't know how to make that money work, but if you're able to pull that off, I think that'd be like a very interesting addition to add to the team that's already in place in Atlanta.
Talking all things Hawks and NBA playoffs with our buddy Matt Moore of the Action Network. Make sure you check out his stuff there. All right, when it comes to the rest of the league, LeBron appearing a bit standoffish, a bit less enthused, let's say, than he has been the last couple of years as the season has worn down about his future. What do you predict is going to happen next year for the Lakers? And the bigger question, the biggest question, is Luka finally going to commit to the type of fitness level required to reach his full potential?
I don't think Luka's there yet. It might take him a while. I think he's still kind of recovering from the shock of the trade. And I do think it takes guys a while to kind of come to grips with what they have to do with their bodies to be the kind of athletes and compete at the level that they want to physically. A lot of guys, it takes them until 28, 29 to have that moment where they're like, I need to get to this next level. Now, maybe the entire narrative about him and how Nico Harrison flamed him out the door, maybe that sparks in him a real revenge factor and he comes into camp next year just cut. But until I see it, I think we have to be a little bit skeptical, especially given any international obligations he might have this summer with his team. Then on top of it, I think with the Lakers, LeBron's not going anywhere. He can grump and grouse and talk all that he wants, but the reason that the Lakers were empowered to be able to move Clutch Klein, Anthony Davis, acquire Luka Doncic, not clear it with LeBron, all of these things is because of the fact of they know LeBron will not leave because he wants to be in Los Angeles and he won't play for the Clippers because they're not a quote unquote prestige enough organization for him. So unless he's actually willing to go somewhere else for the end of his career and finish his career in another uniform. And for him, it's all about legacy and brand and perspective. And the Lakers are the only brand I think that he feels big enough to really have him at this point. And he doesn't want to leave LA. He just doesn't. His family's comfortable there. He's still got a daughter that's still going through school. So I don't think he's going anywhere. The question is going to be, what do you do with that player option? Because if he opts into that player option, their avenues for improving that team get real dicey real quick. And that's going to be a tension point between LeBron's camp and the Lakers.
What have you seen from either the Celtics or the Cavs in the East that puts one above the other? Because I think we all know it's going to be one of those two coming out.
Yeah, it's tough. I think the better team is the Cavs. I think that they're more well-rounded. I think that they're a little bit more balanced. The Celtics have leaned so far into their three-point thing where they're the team that takes the most, they're the team that limits you the most. They win with the math over and over again. Last year, they were a pretty balanced team that also beat you because of their math advantage. This year, they're a math team that also happens to have a really talented roster. That said, the problem is in a matchup between those two teams, Cleveland had one half of basketball where they were able to limit the three-point attempts for the Boston Celtics. And when they did that, they came back and won that game after being down massively in the first half. So if they can show that diagram again, if they can game plan that way and keep Derek White and Peyton Pritchard from wide open catch-and-shoot threes, I think Cleveland can get past them. But I do not think that that's going to happen. I still kind of feel like the Celtics are going to find a way against the Cavs defense, and they're going to advance to the finals.
Despite the awesome heroics by Jalen Brunson, as we're talking about the Eastern Conference, and we'll get to the West here in a second with our buddy Matt Moore of the Action Network. I think it's apparent that they're still maybe a piece away. What do you make of what they've done so far this season and their chances to advance?
The Knicks?
Yes.
Yeah. So the Knicks, sorry, you broke up there for a second. So the Knicks, I think the problem was that they were in the middle of one build when the Karl Anthony Towns trade happened, and they couldn't say no because it was Julius Randle for Karl Anthony Towns and along with Dante DiVincenzo. And they had to do that deal. But the problem was they had built the wing stop, the three wings, high switchability around Brunson, and that covered for Brunson's defensive issues. But when you add Cat, now teams can put Jalen Brunson and Cat into actions, and that's where their defense fell off a cliff. Knicks fans were like, oh, but you know, the back half of the year, we were really good defensively. Yeah, you know why? Because Jalen Brunson was out. It's not Brunson's fault, because if you have a switchable five, he's fine. And it's not Cat's fault, because if you have a good point guard defensively, he's fine. It's when you get into the combo of the two that you're not able to really compete defensively at the level that you need to. So I think the Celtics are going to make quick work of this Knicks team. I think they took everything in them to get out of that series with a Pistons team that was that barely knew what they were doing in the playoffs. And I'm expecting the Celtics to make quick work of the Knicks.
This time next year, is Giannis a buck?
Oh, that's the question everybody wants to know. You know, I wish I had some sort of feel for it. I think everybody's just kind of assuming that he wants to go. But the thing here is with Giannis, he's wired differently. He's an ultra competitor, and that might be the reason why he leaves, because he's like, I don't want to waste a year or 2 years. I want to compete and win another championship right now in my prime. On the other end of it, he's so competitive, he may be like, we can win no matter who. You give me the right guys, and we can win even with Dame on the shelf. Like, he is wired that way, and he does love Milwaukee, and Milwaukee has been good to him, and he has had a sense of loyalty and family. He's not wired like a lot of the other guys, or at least he wasn't. That's the question this summer is, has he grown as an individual into a place where he's a superstar? There's been movies and documentaries about him, books written about him. Has he reached a level of stardom now where he wants to expand his horizons elsewhere? Nobody knows the answer to that. And until they do, we're not going to have any sense of whether Giannis wants to leave. And if he doesn't want to leave, the Bucks are not trading him.
Yeah, and it's going to be just so fascinating to see if he does stay. I don't know, would you call it a rebuild around him at this point, just based on the status of Dame, like you were talking about? Brooke Lopez is another year older. Kyle Kuzma being there. I mean, essentially, I would think that that team is going to look a lot different if they do decide to keep him. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, look, the one of the things that might be in their favor in keeping him is that John Horst, GM, every time that he has been up for an extension or has shown unhappiness, they've made a move. He got unhappy after the multiple flameouts. They traded for Jrue Holiday. They won a title. He got unhappy after multiple flameouts. They traded for Damian Lillard. They hired the coach that he wanted. Now you're in this position where it's kind of the same deal. And he's been aggressive and he's been creative. And John's been opportunistic and aggressive in a way that a lot of GMs honestly aren't enough so with their superstars. But they have limited assets. They're up against the apron. The new CBA is built to ruin teams like this specifically, especially with Dame on the shelf for an entire season. So it's going to be the toughest challenge. And my problem is that even if you do get a better roster around him, I don't know how you have confidence in Doc Rivers at this point. I think Doc's had an incredible career, but there's been nothing but, yeah, their teams are pretty good. That's all he's been able to do over the last decade of coaching. Is yeah, the team's pretty good. Are they elite? No. But they're pretty good, and that's the best that he's been able to do. The coaching decision by firing Mike Budenholzer set off a chain of events, I think, that has led them to this point in part, along with some bad injury luck. And from there, I'm not sure where they go from here because of the restrictions of the new CBA.
Speaking of teams that might be a lot different depending on what happens, I think this has been the best series so far is Clippers and Nuggets. If the Nuggets get bounced, how many changes do you foresee coming, including the coaching position in Denver?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of optimism that David Adelman will be retained, but I was here for the last time they moved on from George Karl and they hired Brian Shaw. And then from when they fired Brian Shaw, and there was Melvin Hunt, who was the interim. The owner, Stan Kroenke, and Josh Kroenke, his son, is the governor. Stan Kroenke tends to want bigger names. He wants more solid hires. And I have a feeling that with Jokic and the importance he feels in terms of maximizing this era of Nuggets basketball, he's going to go for a bigger name. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody like Jeff Van Gundy is mentioned for the position. I think Adelman's got a good shot at it, especially if they get out of the series. That might be enough to get him the job because the team does love Adelman. But I do think it's going to be a big question of what Stan Kroenke wants versus what his son Josh Kroenke, he's a little bit more progressive and might look at some different options, what he wants.
All right, Matt, appreciate the time. As always, we'll be checking you out on the Action Network. Enjoy the playoffs, my friend.
Thanks, man. Take care.
All right, that is our good buddy Matt Moore of the Action Network. All right, when we get back, are the Bucks still the team to beat in the NFC South? Dukes and Bell caught up with one of the best in the biz, Rick Stroud. I'm going to let you hear that conversation. Braves Dodgers are in a rain delay, so just hang tight. I'll get you all the most recent information as there are some thunderstorms coming down now. So if you're out there on the roads, please be safe. What do the Tampa Bay Bucks look like next season? You'll get all that info next. Our biggest division rival coming up next on Chris Thomas Tonight, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.